I would love to. Mon Dieu, donnez-moi la sérénité d'accepter les choses que je ne peux pas changer, changer les choses que je peux changer et d'accepter les choses que je ne peux pas changer.
Thank you, Karen. And I'll just do my own serenity prayer in Dutch. And God, geef mij de gemoedsrust om te veranderen wat ik niet kan veranderen. De moed om te veranderen wat ik kan veranderen. En de wijsheid om deze twee het onderscheid te maken. Thank you. And Wayne, are you here?
I am.
Great. Ah, there you are. I see you. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, thank you.
Okay, I think I'm just gonna give it over to you and I'm gonna let you talk about the topic, whatever that means to you, in whichever way.
Okay, and it's 45 minutes, correct?
That's right, Wayne. And you're
Okay.
the last speaker, so if you run long for 5 minutes, that's fine.
Ordinarily, I'd like to, but I can't today. Doggone it.
Right, God put restrictions on you.
I'm Wayne, an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober. I love AA. I love Al-Anon too, as a matter of fact. Got several Al-Anons in my life that have played an important part in my sobriety. Want to thank Billy for inviting me to come share on the topic of love, which years ago would have been very interesting to be asked to speak about. Sort of like being asked to be the spiritual speaker a long time ago. I wouldn't know why they would do that. But, I've learned and I've grown. I'm the man I am today because of Alcoholics Anonymous and a lot of people and a lot of love. I really do want to talk about the topic today. I'll qualify for just a minute. I'm unable to drink safely and I'm unable to quit when I want to. That makes me alcoholic, according to page 45 of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just going to leave it there. I was raised in an alcoholic home, a lot of madness, a lot of insanity, a lot of things that I didn't understand. Prior to quite a while into my sobriety, being alcoholic and asthmatic, I've only known the idea of love as exposed, by the way, in my inventory and subsequent actions in sobriety. My idea of love was selfish and unkind and jealous and possessive and I just didn't understand that. I don't want to blame my family. I don't want to blame any entity for that. It's just I understand that I have a dilemma, and what are we going to do about it? And I'm in a spot where I've gone through a new phase of my development. I don't want to forget this. I want to thank my posse for showing up from around the world to support me today. I know many of you folks that are on this meeting. Many of us have trudged this road of happy destiny together for many, many years, one day at a time. With bumps in the road and heights in the road, and I don't want to even go into that negative space. This last year has been a great year for me. I've got to get a lot of work done, a lot of personal effort done. So this has really been a good year for me, and I'm really pleased about that. But what I want to talk about is the history behind what brought me hope and help, because when I say I love AA, I love AA with all of my heart and soul, as much and more than I loved the love I found in a bottle of Budweiser, I have to say. AA is not designed, I discovered. I can't speak for Al-Anon because I'm not a member, but I can speak for what I believe about AA. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous is not a treatment for disease. It's not a treatment for chronic mental illness. It's a treatment for a spiritual malady. I need to know that. And knowing that I'm being treated for a spiritual malady in AA vis-a-vis the 12 steps, I'm also understanding that the 12 steps have the power to resolve and relieve me of the symptoms mentally and emotionally that are exposed because of the spiritual malady with which I'm afflicted. And I have to take full responsibility for all of that if I'm to recover. And so I'm glad that I know that AA is designed specifically to treat that condition. And I hope I don't freak nobody out. I'm going to speak freely. I'm going to invoke a little bit of theology, just a touch. I don't want to offend anybody's sensibilities, but I think it's important. You know, Bill Wilson sobered on December 12, 1934. And what's really interesting about that is I think God has wept for us, alcoholics and Al-Anonics. I believe God has wept for us for 5,000 years of recorded history. I believe he's watched us suffer and succumb day after day, week after week, and year after year. And I think he who is everything or he is nothing, I think he watched and wondered. And I'm hesitant to say he who knows all didn't know this, but I think in his merciful love, I think he knew we needed a nudge. You know, Mandela said, if you talk to a man in a language he understands, that goes to his head. If you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. You know, in 1992, when Mandela was given a talk in Africa, he was known to say, speak a language, English. Well, many people understand you, including Afrikaans. But if you speak Afrikaans, you know you go straight to their hearts. And I have to say that in this time that I've been privileged to be an active participant in Alcoholics Anonymous in my own life, I believe that this merciful God that I've come to love with all my heart, I've come to believe that in these years of sorrow and suffering that we alcoholics and you Al-Anonics have endured at the hands of the illness of alcoholism, I believe this all-loving, merciful God must have said, I got to do something for these people before they blow them. Okay, there I go. I believe that in 1934, when Bill Wilson took his last drink and spent the next 6 months trying to find somebody that would listen to him and respond. And for 6 months, he talked to drinking alcoholic after drinking alcoholic after drinking alcoholic, and none of them responded. And one, God bless him, actually hung himself in Bill's house. He was so frustrated. And that frustrated Bill. And thank God that the soon-to-be co-founder of Al-Anon, Lois Wilson, who teamed up with Ann Burwell to found that wonderful program that so many families have had the ability to recover from this madness called alcoholism. I suppose she was probably fed up with Bill grousing about his failures. And she finally said to him in a moment, but Bill, you're sober. And that was a pivot point, I think, for not only alcoholics, but for the Al-Anon family groups that were shortly to come as a result. And as I pondered that and I thought about that, Bill went to Dr. Silkworth in hopes of finding out what's wrong. And so in talking to Dr. Silkworth, Silky asked Bill, well, what are you saying to these people? And Bill replied, I'm paraphrasing, I hope you don't mind. He tells Silkworth what he's doing. He's telling him about how he's telling him about his white likes. Could you imagine being a sick and suffering alcoholic just coming off Skid Row? Here comes this tall, lanky fella talking about God and white lights. I'd have to have a drink, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just telling you from my own perspective. And Silkworth, I can just see him choking back a little bit of laughter. And then he says, but Bill, that is not what worked for you. That is not what he believed drove Bill to that desperate white light experience. He said, Bill, I gave you the hopeless feature of the medical estimate. I gave you the allergy and the obsession, and you're running around talking to him about God. You got the cart before the horse. He says, why don't you try this? Why don't you try telling them what I told you about the allergy and the obsession? And then once they're convinced perhaps that they have that problem, then you can offer them the solution that you have found of God and spirituality. And isn't, lo and behold, this merciful God that's been weeping over us all these years with all the failed attempts to find something that can help that Skid Row alcoholic, that man or that woman that has no hope nowhere, that he is to meet with a doctor, a proctologist. I think God knew I was coming, so I needed help, if you know what I mean. he gets this doctor who is already in the Oxford group movement for 4 years, drinking after every session. Here's this doctor who's more well-versed in the Bible than Bill ever thought about being. And if Bill would have approached him with that, Dr. Bob could have laughed him out of countenance. But instead, Bill followed Silky's advice. And he met with Dr. Bob, who gave him 15 minutes at the Cyberlina State Gatehouse. He offered him 15 minutes. And they left 5.5 hours later, because Bill began talking about this medical estimate of this strange allergy to alcohol that condemns a man to keep drinking once he starts. And then once he stops, this obsession that compels him to take yet another drink, starting the madness all over again. And about the physical liabilities of this. And then coming in later was the spiritual malady, which is critically important. And so he's given Dr. Bob exactly what a doctor would identify with. And then he told Bill about this thing about where he needs another suffering alcoholic to work with so he himself can stay sober. And then Bill and Bob, of course, had that moment where they realized they both had to go out. You know, they could have stopped there. Many things have happened in the past. Many programs, the Washingtonian movement, which was much larger, much faster than AA, the Emmanuel movement that Courtney Baylor had began to solve the dilemma, but they kept missing one little component here, one little component there. 5,000 years of recorded history, folks. Not only was the alcoholic suffering and dying, but so was those who loved them, dying from the pain and the suffering that goes on. And this merciful God that I love so much looked down on us. And of all people to bring together, a bankrupt stock speculator and a drunken proctologist, both with wives that put up with their nonsense, who loved them despite their behavior. That's a kind of love I have never seen before, nor did I ever think about living in. I didn't understand that. And when they got that call, when they went to that hospital, Bill and Bob, to visit that man on the bed, you know, I was reading this book when I did my history research. I found this book called Strong Drink, published in 1877. And it was about this doctor that was under the madness of alcohol. And in that book, there's a picture of the man on the bed, published in 1877. And who knew that in 1935, it would be repeated with Bill and Bob visiting that lawyer on his bed, giving the nurses a hard time. And who was to know that that was to be the beginning of this worldwide fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous and the ensuing Al-Anon family groups that made it possible. And I can't speak for them because I'm not one, but I'm going to say that it made it possible for them to get free and love themselves enough to learn a way to sidestep or be relieved of the bondage that goes with that faulty emotional dependency. And I just want to say, folks, that's how I lived. And I would like to tell you, I think, that I've been happy, joyous, and free for 43 years. My sobriety date is November 8th, 1977. But many of you have known me for many years. And I'm here to report to you that, thank God, this is a process. Not to use this as an excuse, but to say that I am so grateful that over the years, that little by little by little, I've been able to evolve and to progress and to find a way to live free of alcohol. But not only free of alcohol, because you see, I didn't understand my dilemma. Being raised in an alcoholic home, having all of the attendant suffering and emotions that are caused by, you know, Bill wrote about how any child raised in an alcoholic home is bound to be more or less neurotic. And I'm one of those. And when I remember to this day, my first drink when I was 17 years old, I took that first drink and it did something for me that I know by science is not biochemically indicated to do. It created a spiritual-like experience. It literally altered my perception of everything about me and within me. And I know it's not supposed to do that. alcohol being a central nervous system suppressant only. It's supposed to only sedate me and impair my judgment if I overdrink. I understand that today. But you know what? If you take a few drinks and it makes you so good looking you can't stand it and you just become Superman in your mind, when someone says you need to quit drinking, I just simply think they need to die. That's where my mind goes. And so from being on full death roll in 1977, when I took my last drink on November 8th of that year, little did I know the kind of love that was to surround me and I was able to surrender to eventually. I found out for alcoholics of my type, surrender is an evolutionary commodity. You know, please forgive me for bringing in this little bit of theology. I hear many people talking about hitting rock bottom. In my mind, I think they're talking about rocky bottom because some of them go back to drinking after they hit rock bottom. And I don't think they understand the religious connotation with the phrase rock bottom. And perhaps they don't, they just don't know. And I was reluctant to bring this up, but I'm going to anyway. It's like, I didn't hit rock bottom when I took my last drink, and I had not hit my rock bottom when I was 7 years sober and had a gun in my mouth after a meeting one night. I kept hitting bottom after bottom. You notice I didn't put the shovel down. I just kept digging. And my shovel has a name. Its name is Self-Will Runs Riot. That was my shovel. And I just kept digging and digging and digging, going to meetings every day, sponsoring people, taking the steps, doing everything my sponsor said. And I just never stopped wondering, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And by the way, I would ask people and they would tell me, so I quit talking to them. I come into this precious program called Alcoholics Anonymous. At 7 years sober, my sponsor put me on a Greyhound bus and shipped me to Southern California to somebody he thought could help me. And I spent 6 months with him and his group, met a bunch of people like me, had an experience, and that experience led to another experience, led to another experience. In other words, I didn't quit, ladies and gentlemen. If you're new and you're in this meeting, I implore you not to quit. Go to meetings, even if you don't think this thing is working. And I caution you about one thing that's a fatal flaw in this love scheme that we're talking about. You know, when Bill wrote the book Alcoholics Anonymous, he had a lot of input from pioneers, a lot of non-alcoholic pioneers. But you see, what Mandela was to say later, Bill had a vision. Bill somehow knew we talk different, that we alcoholics, and I would bet you Al-Anonics, we have this culture and this language. And I had great men in Illinois of science and medicine and religion. The pastor of my church, I loved him. I love my church. I to this day, I have no bone to pick with anybody's religion. If it brings peace to somebody's spirit, I think that's a good thing. And my pastor was baffled by me. I would go to church and I would drink before church. And he would tell me what's going to happen to my soul if I keep drinking and do what I'm doing. And you know what? I have to tell you, I understood what he meant and I believed what he said, and I drank. When the United States Navy, which I loved with all my heart, and I love the esprit de corps, I'm a patriot. I have no problem standing on the firing line for my country. And when they said to me, Butler, you got to go to treatment, I said, for what? They said, you're an alcoholic. You had a blackout. I said, I ain't no alcoholic. I only drink beer. I mean, I only drink beer. I can't even conceive of the idea of not taking that drink, and I don't know why. Because I want that drink. What I really wanted was the effect produced, but I had to come to you guys to find that out. But when he told me if I didn't go to treatment, that I had to go home, and I knew what he was saying, they're going to put me out of the Navy. And because of my military service, because of the medals I was awarded in Vietnam, he saw to it that I got an honorable discharge with no asterisk behind it. And you know what? As bad as that made me feel, I took the discharge so I could keep drinking, even though I'm not an alcoholic. You see, I understood him when he told me what that would mean. When my wife said, if you go drinking tonight, I'm leaving. Folks, I went right upstairs and started packing her bag. I'm not bragging about that, but if it comes between her and my drinking, she's got to go. I knew what that meant. That meant loneliness. That meant I knew my heart was going to break and I was going to over my children, that I was going to have to pay child support. I understood that. And I drank anyway. When the psychiatrist told me what was going to keep happening to me if I keep ending up in the psychiatric hospitals and drinking on this and drinking on that, and he told me what was going to happen if I drank on this pill and if I drank on this pill, and I believed him and I understood, but you alcoholics know it was worth the risk. You know I drank anyway. You see, Mandela's right. I understood what he was saying to me, but it didn't get any farther than my head. But on November 24th, 1977, Thanksgiving weekend, on November 60th, I beg your pardon, when prior setting up for Thanksgiving, I'm not drinking, I'm sober a few days. My dad, who's sober in AA, finds out I'm sober, so invites me over for Thanksgiving dinner on Thursday, November 24th. And 2 days later, that night, I'm losing my thought here. On Thanksgiving, my dad picked up a drink with 9 years sober, and I was going to take a drink with him. I wanted to have a drink with my dad. If any of you came from the kind of a home I did, and I'm sure you did, or if you lived in one, you're going to relate to this. I wanted anything from my dad that was kind. And when he said, have a beer with me, I mean, after all, he was sober 9 years. I'm only 16 days sober at this point. Surely I can have a drink with my dad. And I remember somewhere from the first 16 mornings and 15 nights where I called my sponsor every morning, every night since I took my last drink, my dad picked up his first drink and drank it. And I opened up a can of beer, Miller Lite, that new beer in 1977. The thought went through my head. You know, I wonder, is it odd or is it God? Who's to say? But I've learned in AA that God shows up in odd ways when you're in the way, when you're in this valuable program. And with the Al-Anon family groups, things start happening that you don't know how they happen. Is it odd or is it God? Who's to say? But I picked up that phone out of habit and I called my sponsor Thanksgiving Day. He's about to have Thanksgiving dinner with his son and daughter who just came in from the East Coast to see their dad for this one day. And I called him up. Now, remember, this was back in the day. There was no internet. There were no cell phones, no voice, no answer machines, no caller ID. So he didn't know it was me calling. And he answers that phone. And I said, Barney, and he says, what do you want? I said, my dad is having a beer, and I want to have one with him. Is that okay? Now, I'm sure you folks, all 325 of you, I'll bet you all know that's a simple yes or no question. Wouldn't you agree with that? Is that okay? And what he said to me was, I'll be right over, and he hung up. And I called him right back because that is not yes or no. And you know what? Back in those days, if you called somebody, that phone would ring for a week if you didn't disconnect it or the other end. Shortly thereafter, my sponsor shows up at my dad's house. I didn't even know he knew where he lived. I didn't know about the AA spy agency that we got around the rooms. Barney comes walking in our living room, and he looks at my dad, and he sees my dad's got some empty cans there. He tell my dad's been drinking, and he said later that he looked at me, and he saw by that grip I had on my can that I hadn't drank it yet. And he says, come on, let's go for a ride. Folks, I had no idea. I've been psychoanalyzed by some of the best psychiatrists in the state of Illinois. One doctor, Dr. Ripple Keefe, wrote a book that's published by Hazelden. One of those chapters is my case. And he was to say I would never recover, that I would have to be medicated for the rest of my natural life. So I'm there. I'm waiting. I'm on the phone. Barney shows up. And he says, let's go for a ride. And out of respect for that man, I did not know that the love of AA was already active in my life. You know, Bill wrote in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. I weighed 146 pounds. I'm 6'3". I had four teeth strategically located. I was suffering so bad. I needed a drink, folks. And my dad's got a 12-pack of Miller Lite right there, and six of them are mine. And Barney shows up. I had no idea that he was already working me. I had no idea that God was at work through one of his agents. William Barney Barnett, of whom I have been led to many other what I like to call influencers in my life that I'll get to shortly. We go for that ride. I left my can of beer behind, and I shot my dad a look, leave my six alone. And I went, because I planned on having a beer with my dad no matter what. I had no idea that God was at work. The great puppeteer had no idea what was happening to me. We go for a ride. I don't know nothing from nothing about no Mandela quote. Wouldn't have meant nothing to me anyway if I'd heard it that day. But he drives me around, and instead of talking at me, talking about me, or lecturing me, or spiritualizing me, he talked about himself. He talked about how, since his wife died, he sits in a rocking chair, drinking a fifth of Kessler's, watching a polar bear in a snowstorm. Now, for you younger folks, that's because back in those days, we had three channels only. Two went off at midnight, one went off at 1 a.m., and there'd just be snowy screen with this target-looking thing. And he said he would drink his Kessler's and look for his wife in that screen. And I began to weep. He's telling me about his wife, how much he loves and misses her, and that he drank that whiskey, and somehow it made him feel comfortable with her. And then he had to stop. And he talked about these crusty old timers that helped him. And then he told me that he loves AA. He even lied and said he loved me, but I figure that's what they teach him in sponsor school, to reel in the newcomers, right? And as he's driving me around, as we get back to the house an hour later, he says to me, if you don't drink tonight, I'll pick you up tomorrow morning, sharp. And if you don't drink, I'll take you and buy you a new set of clothes. You know, he could have said, my God, you stink. You've been wearing the same clothes since you got sober. Don't you know how to bat? He could have shamed me like many people did. And by the way, I understand why they would. So I'm okay with that. But he didn't do that. And you know what? I didn't drink that night. My dad drank that whole 12 pack, went and got a fifth of Jack Daniels, and he never made it back. He died a year and a half later. But my sponsor showed up, which is why when Billy asked me to do this, there is no no in my alcoholic vocabulary. When Billy asked me to do this, it was automatically yes. Partly because I love Billy. Billy's a good guy. He's always shown me kindness. And when Barney picked me up that morning, I can't tell you how hard it was for me to get through that night, watching my dad drink again. And I just wanted my dad to say, I love you, kid. But you know who said it to me instead? Barney said, I love you, kid. Well, he said, I love you, dummy. He liked to say that word, you know. He liked to watch Sanford and Son. I digress. So he picked me up that morning on time. He said, if I hadn't been on that porch, he'd have drove right on by. He said, I'm going to carry the message. I'm not going to carry the alcoholic. And I thought we were going to go to JCPenney to shop for a new set of clothes, maybe Sears and Roebuck. No, he took me to Salvation Army. Now, kids, I want you to know something. In 1977, disco was out at Studio 54, and I think they donated everything Zoot Suit to the Salvation Armies around the country. And in that Salvation Army were rows and rows and rows of lime green double-knit polyester leisure suits. And he bought me one of those hideous outfits. Bought me this silk, I thought it was silk, brushed polyester, blah, blah, blah. Took me to the shoe department, where the only 13.5-inch gunboats they had in supply were a pair of black and brown box-toe Oxford platform disco shoes. I went into that Salvation Army 6'3" and came out 6'8", but baby, I was happening with all four teeth. I mean, I had my old tongue going, so I didn't have any teeth to stop it. I was quick. My racing mind got ahead of everybody, I have to tell you the truth. He took me to his trailer, and he says, if you'd like to, before you put those nice new clothes on, you can take a bath. I don't know why, but I said, okay. And I went into his bathroom, and I took a bath. And then I put that suit on. And then he took me to that convention and stood me at the front door and made me a greeter. And let me tell you, everybody else noticed that suit. I can tell you that right now. If I wanted some attention, I got all of it and more. And I want to tell you about that only because I think God whispers to us through each other. You see, I discovered something about the steps. You know, the six members of AA that came there that weekend to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was a guy named Chuck C. And he had his wife Elsa with him. A guy named Norm Alpe from out in the valley. A guy named Johnny H. from Bellflower, California. A guy named Clancy from high in the sky. It's Clancy High. A lady named Dottie Shore from out in Radford. Her sponsor, Alabama Carruthers. And a guy named Tom Brady Jr. from Charlotte, North Carolina. Those were my next set of what I didn't know to be spiritual influencers. Chuck C., you know, I got to sit at Chuck's table. My sponsor gave me his banquet ticket, hoping, I think, that Chuck could do something for me. And I sat with his table, and I know I still stank just because I, you know, you don't wash off that odor from living in a dumpster by taking one bath. And yet I sat at his banquet table, and Chuck never sniffed one time. Elsa gave me a kiss on the head. Dottie Shore gave me a kiss on the head. Johnny patted me down because he heard I like to play with guns. So he was just doing, you know, he was so smart. That's how he brought me in. Clancy talked about this disease of perception. And you know, Norm, he talked so fast, I just wasn't sure. But he said, seconds and inches, seconds and inches. I couldn't get that. He just kept saying seconds and inches. Tom Brady talked about emotional sobriety, the next frontier. And then Johnny H. said something that held me in good stead for a while. He said something I never heard another human being say, and he said it in my language. You see, that was the Mandela effect. When Barney drove around for an hour, he didn't talk at me. He talked with me. He talked language of the heart. You see, he wasn't talking a language I understand. He was talking my language, common, down to earth, simple to understand language. And you know what? Barney got me. I'm here to report to you. I know that's why I was willing to go get those clothes with him. I know that's why I took a bath in his bathtub. I know that's why I stood at that front door. And by the way, there was over 600 people at that convention. Barney stood by my side the entire time I greeted him. Partly because he's afraid to hit somebody if they laughed at me, but he still stood there with me. So here I am, Johnny's speaking. And he said something that I wasn't ready for. He said, I hope I get out. He was in solitary confinement, said he, in a dark cell, crawling around on all fours, howling at the moon. And he said something to this effect. He said, I want out of prison. But then I have this thought, where am I going to go? I'm too good for the bad people. I'm too bad for the good. That was my moment. That's exactly how I felt. I am too bad for my church people. I love my church. I love everything about church, folks, I got to tell you. And I just didn't get it. But they got me at the different. My head can shut down anything you bring at me. I can rationalize, minimize, justify, and deny anything that you might bring to me that could be helpful. But I'm disarmed. I'm disarmed because they're coming at me from a place I don't understand. They're coming at me from this soulfulness. See, they understood they had a soul sickness. They understood that AA treats a spiritual malady. They understood that if they could help me with this soul sickness I have, I might not ever have to drink again. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know what Mandela meant, is that we're going to talk to you in your language. We're going to talk to you in what I like to call Alkiese. There's a language and a culture about, and I'll bet you if I pulled enough of you Al-Anon members, I'll bet you have a culture and language of your own. And I believe God knew that. God knew that the Al-Anonics needed a fellowship just as bad as we alcoholics do. And I believe this God that I love so much made that happen. And who did he pick? You know, it's funny how they get picked. Lois was married to Bill. I assumed that Ann Smith would be the co-founder, but no. He needed Ann Burwell to be the co-founder of Al-Anon, just like Bill and Bob needed to be the two bookends of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that convention, I laughed, I cried, but little did I know. In my head, I was trying to fight it off. I knew something was happening, and it was just enough to keep me going to AA until I hit that second bottom, because, you know, even though I'm not drinking no more, the alcohol, the ism factor in me, being ismatic, I'm not drinking, folks. That's not the issue right now. I didn't know anything about being ismatic, having this internal spiritual maladjustment that if it is not identified and treated, I will go back to drinking again, because the abnormal effect produced by alcohol is what's going to fix that in me. I didn't know that. I'm glad I stayed even when I was in doubt. I'm glad I stayed on that little bit of faith that I had from that first convention. I'm glad I allowed my sponsor to push me into doing service that I didn't believe in. I'm glad he sent me to California when I was 7 years out of my mind. I was offended that it was a one-way ticket. I wasn't quite sure what he meant by that. But I come back, I find some history about Bill Wilson and Father Ed Dowling, and I had yet another awakening. And I just want to jump ahead, because I've only got about 8 or 9 minutes left here in my allotted time. I want to say, I am so glad that I stayed. You know, and I've had many moments in my sobriety. It's been a bumpy road. I'd be lying to you if I even tried to pretend I didn't have trouble sober. Come on. We all know, we all do. And I'm not trying to we all you so I don't have to look at me. I have been blessed with this thing called spiritual power to even stay here past my own doubts and fears and self-imposed limitations. And through the years of continuing sponsorship, I've had the best influencers in my life. Right now, my sponsor is Boston Tommy M out of St. Petersburg, Florida. And some of my AA brothers and sisters are on this meeting right now. I'm looking right at one, Kelly and her husband, Mike. And I know my sponsees and grand sponsees. I've got a great, great, great grand sponsee in this meeting right now. Some people think that's silly, but I got to tell you, I have a family. And my family is connected, see? And it's connected all the way back to Bill, just like everybody else in this room. Some of you are connected all the way back to Lois and Ann. And it's good to know I'm connected, that I have this connection to a power greater than myself. It's so moving, this adventure, with all the trials and tribulations. Because, you know, Valentine's Day used to be a terrible day for me. But you know what? In the process of doing steps 10, 11, and 12, for many, many years now, one day at a time, what I've discovered is simple. The first step revealed to me a paradox of duality, you know, the alcohol problem. But once you put that aside, what's the real problem? And it was revealed to me that the real problem is a spiritual malady. And I must believe that if I'm to recover over the long term. I didn't understand that on November 8th, 1977. And little by little, in the pain and the growth, the inventories I've taken, the mistakes I've made, I'll give you another quick one. Yesterday, my place was broken into. Someone broke in, stole some stuff, took my 15-inch MacBook Pro, my MacBook Pro book that I was going to come on to this meeting with. And I've really been racing around for a day to get another computer so I could be on this line. And you know what? At 5 a.m., I was awoken by something. By the time I got out into the room, whoever it was gone. And I saw what they did. And my first reaction was anger. Because when I get up, first thing I do is go to the bathroom. Second thing I do is my 11th step. And I didn't take the time, because I was in the throes of a desperate situation. Got the police there. But I tell you what I did. After I looked at the room, at 5:15, I called my sponsor. Now, I'm 43 years sober. My sponsor's 57 years sober. You know what? He answered the phone. Of course, for him, it was 8:15. He answered the phone. And I have had a long list of sponsorship. They answer the phone. And he was there for me. And I followed directions, called the cops, got the cops over there, got the board of directors that's involved in this building, did all the things I'm supposed to do. But I was still angry. And I got out this little card that's got my 11-step prayer on it. It's got the 12 spiritual principles and the spot check inventory. And I went right to the spot check inventory right there in the throes of a mess that these people left behind. And I did the spot check inventory. Yesterday, I was on Error Truth. It's a good day for that yesterday, because you see, my mistake was I knew that I should lock that laptop up in case anybody would ever break in. And for once, I did it, lock it up, and that was the night. That does not absolve them, and I hope they get arrested and prosecuted. But what it did for me was made me laugh at myself. I should have known better because I disciplined myself in doing that. My point is that I've learned that when I make a mistake, admit my mistake, and it has this powering effect to relax me. I don't need a Budweiser to relax me like I used to. Now I have a spot check inventory. I have the prayer of St. Francis. I have other prayers that I read, the spot check prayer, the prayer of tolerance, the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, the seventh, my favorite, the serenity prayer. I've got all these prayers to stop me in my tracks so I can clear my mind and find out what the next indicated action is that won't put me in even further jeopardy. And lastly, I want to say this. Step two, I got to discover that I'm a chapter four alcoholic, that I've got this ism factor, this internal spiritual maladjustment. Page 52 tells me how it shows up. You see, my brother's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type alcoholic. So in the 40 years he's been sober, he's had very little strife emotionally. You see, I'm a Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll. I'm a Mr. Hyde looking for Dr. Jekyll. And I found him in a bottle of Budweiser. And if you're not like me, that means drinking does something for me that makes me feel normal, whatever that means. I found a different way now. I just want to say that as I've stayed sober one day at a time, as I've traveled this path, and by the way, path is not plural. If you read how it works, path is not plural. I have four members of my family that all had sobriety in AA, and four of them died drunk, two by suicide. And I'm here to report to you that I witnessed it, and I know what they did. Where Bill wrote, rarely have I seen a person fail that has thoroughly followed our path. All four of them did not keep that path singular. They got involved in all kinds of psychiatric, sociological, psychological, outside professional thinking that has nothing to do with our work in AA. And I believe it obscured them from the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they could not or would not continue to see our way. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous is not designed to treat disease. Alcoholics Anonymous is not designed to treat anything except a spiritual malady and the results that I get mentally, emotionally, and financially in relation to my disobedience to trying to practice a spiritual way of life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love AA. I love you guys. I love my sponsees. I don't act like it sometimes, but I love my sponsees. I love my sponsor. I love watching him with his wife, Linda. I love watching that relationship. One day, maybe I'll have a relationship like that. But you know what? I'm not crazy about it anymore, and I'm going to tell you why I know that. Because I love God more than anything. And I've got this relationship with my God of AA to where I've learned that love is not what I thought it was. It isn't unselfish and unkind. It isn't selfish and unkind. It isn't jealous and possessive. And I also found out one last thing, and I'll close with this. I discovered in steps 10, 11, and 12. In step 10, my new employer in step three is God, as I understand it. That's my new employer. I discovered in steps 10, 11, and 12 what my work is. I discovered where my job site is. I discovered for whom it is I do my work. And in my case, my job is to carry the message to other alcoholics and suffering. To do it in AA, that's my job site. And that God has trusted me with this ability to carry that message. That's what I believe. And because of that, I believe that that's why I get to live a life today, 43 years later, one day at a time, that's happy, joyous, and free. I look forward to getting calls from my sponsees. Well, most of the time anyway, there's a few of them here, knuckleheads on here. But I was a knucklehead. I used to have hair at one time, but the knuckle in my head, I guess, kind of pushed it away. But it serves me well to know that as long as I can stay right here, you know, my family lost sight of this thing. And all four of them drifted away from the spiritual malady concept and bought into a lot of professional concepts. And they didn't need AA anymore. And I saw the drift happening to them. And you know what, folks? It could happen to me. I don't live in fear of that. I live in the awareness of that. I am awake to the spirituality of life today. And I can't think of a greater love. You know, Bill wrote in Emotional Sobriety, The Next Frontier, he wrote, that it's about adult love and learning what adult love really is. I had no concept of that, but I think I do now. To the purpose of my life, I have come to believe the purpose of my life is not about being loved, though that is what I came here believing. The purpose of my life is to love. And that means action. So when I say to you, I love AA, that means I will not say no to a legitimate request for AA service. If I do, I don't love AA as much as I'm putting on. And I know that. So in that event, it's been my pleasure to come here and be at this meeting. I have an appointment at the VA to get my second shot for the COVID vaccine. I'm probably going to be a little bit late, but they'll take me, you know, because I know who I work for and I know he wants me well. So they'll take, I hope that's not overconfidence, you know, I don't know. But it's been my pleasure to share with you and to be a part and to see some of the people I love a lot in these different rooms. As I've kind of scanned through and looked at some of your faces, I wish I could touch your face. I wish, you know, wish in one hand and doo-doo in the other, you know, but there's going to come a day when we are going to get to be back to normal as we understand normal. We're going to be able to come together the way we love to come together. We're going to be able to hold hands. We're going to be able to hug. And we're going to be able to say, I love you face to face. And we're going to be able to get mad at each other. We're going to be able to do all the other stuff that we do. We're human. But at the end of the day, what it's going to be, it's going to be one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic where recovery begins. And I'm certain the same is true for you Al-Anonics. It's been my pleasure. I love you guys. I'll leave it there.
Wayne, thank you so much. You guys, you want to unmute yourself and make some noise and let Wayne know you're here.
Thank you, Wayne. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that was so powerful.